Hello and welcome to What Else Is On the Show on the Else Nerds Network, where we talk the latest comic book news. Well, no, comic book news this week because of Comic-Con, but the TV shows and movies. And we're going to talk about Comic-Con because, quite frankly, I'm riding this Comic-Con high, even though I didn't go to San Diego, which, God, imagine me if I did go and all that, how I would be.
If you went to San Diego, you would be so butt-tired right now, wouldn't even make any... You would just... You'd be like, oh, Comic-Con.
And I probably would have got the nerd flu and all that stuff. But so for the news segment a little bit, we're going to talk about some of the things that we saw may turn out to be the things I saw. Because if you don't know about like Netcasts and all that stuff that we do over there, or that I do, I put out 6 posts last week. That's a record for me. All about the comic book news. And then from like Wednesday to Saturday was Comic-Con. It was like, oh, here's everything coming out of Comic-Con and all that. Like, and so I'm hoping that you guys checked it out and you guys enjoyed it. And a couple of the trailers came out from DC because Marvel, the film studio Marvel was not there. They're like, hey, we're going to skip because we don't have anything to show you, or our movie comes out the week after and you've already seen all the trailers. So it's like, that being Ant-Man.
By the way, I'm Corey Scott. Hey, thanks for the introduction. Yeah.
Sorry, I got sidetracked. Okay. It's San Diego thing,
I am so just hoping that I don't see anything else leak with Ant-Man. I'm tired of knowing too much about the film going in. I'm just going to go see the movie. The wife asked me the other day. She's like, oh, so how's Ant-Man doing? I'm like, oh, it hasn't come out yet. Because you can tell, because I'm sitting here. If it was out, you'd be talking to an empty chair.
You'd just be talking to the smoke silhouette like you see in Looney Tunes cartoons.
There would be some lonely cats sitting on this chair going, where's our human pillow?
Oh, and Beatmaster's pointing out the great thing that, yes, Disney Marvel wasn't there, so the Marvel Studios proper, you know, like Ant-Man, Avengers, Spider-Man, all those were not there, but the Fox ones were, so the Deadpool... Deadpool was a part of the panel, or had a panel in Hall H. X-Men Apocalypse was there. They were even on Conan, talking about the show, or talking about their movie. And the animation was there, and the comic books was there. Which, interesting little side note, you remember 2 weeks ago we talked about the Boomerang original Scooby-Doo show?
Right.
Guess who's doing the voice of Velma?
I don't know.
Kate Micucci.
Oh, okay. I saw it.
Yes. Courtesy of this TV guide here that I went and bought. In the back, they got the whole, like, it's all basically, hey, look, check out the Comic-Con stuff. But right there, they give you all the people who are voicing in Scooby-Doo.
I know it's trying to keep people together. Like, eventually Matt Damon had to spring off from Ben Affleck. But I certainly wouldn't mind Ricky Lindholm playing Daphne. I'd like to see that cosplay.
Yeah. Daphne is voiced by Gray Griffin, which I don't know exactly who she is. Scooby-Doo is voiced by Frank Welker, who also voices Fred Jones. And Shaggy is voiced by Matthew Lillard.
Frank Welker is a very well-known voice of actor. He was in the Transformers stuff.
Okay.
But he's done voices for forever.
Yeah. And so that was when I'm like, oh, hey, cool. Kate Micucci's in there. Now if only I had Boomerang. But so some of the big trailers that I saw were the Batman v Superman trailer. And this is the moment where I don't want to see any more footage from Batman v Superman until the movie. Like, I am there pulling the full Kanata. Well, not the full Kanata because I wouldn't have seen anything, but I want to see no more. Because I feel like it'll just spoil me on the movie. Which is sort of my feeling right now. And then the other one that I saw, because I think it got leaked, and then DC's like, we'll fight your leak by releasing it officially, was the Suicide Squad trailer. Which, I like Jared Leto's Joker. I feel like it's channeling a little too much Heath Ledger and how it sounds, and how he sounds.
But voice-wise, I I agree with you. I don't think that it's necessarily the same Joker take, but vocally, you can only disguise your voice so much, and he has many different ways he could go. He could go to the old Cesar Romero. He could go to the Mark Hamill. He could go Heath Ledger. It sounds like the way that they are showing the character, the range that they would want it in would be the Heath Ledger. It is currently the most iconic as far as moviegoers are concerned.
Yeah, and it's like, I don't have a problem with it. I was just like, all right, okay, yeah. It'll be interesting. Because, I mean, there's nothing else to go on in that little, I think it's like, what, 3 minute little thing that they threw together. And I didn't see the, what was it, the Deadpool one, because it's just like from the foot, like a camera shooting the screen, and like, I don't want to see that version. Luckily, I'm not as well known as Brian Ibbett, because I didn't get the spoiler about, oh, hey, this happened, there's a knock on there about Green Lantern, and whatever.
I saw it.
And how did you like it?
I liked it. It has the tone that we want from that movie and from that actor being that character. It is exactly what the fans have asked for. Now, does that make a good movie? We'll have to wait and see. But, I mean, it is an R-rated movie for language alone. I think for the bloodshed and everything that it's going to have, it will hit the hard R and deserve it. And there's some good moments where he meets up with a couple other X-Men characters. He has his talking to the screen, his breaking the fourth wall. All of that stuff is in there. There's some good scenes with T.J. Miller playing against him. It worked really well. It is, like I said, it's what we've been asking for from a Deadpool movie for the last several years since they introduced the character in X-Men Origins and destroyed it. This was totally making up for it. Rob Liefeld did a very good interview on toplessrobot.com where he talked about, you know, he's been looking at this stuff for the last 6 years. He read the script. He's like, man, if they make this movie, this is the movie that people want to see. And then they got the director, and he's like, yeah, that's the director that I think would do it justice. And everything that he wanted to see happen, he's been preaching about it. He's like, that's the stuff that's in there. And I think that you see that when you see it up on the screen.
Yeah. Now, and I think this could open a very interesting thing with the in Marvel in general, actually in comic book movies in general, because with the exception of the Mark Millar stuff like Kick-Ass, Kingsman, Secret Service, you know, all those where they are, I don't necessarily know how true they're staying to the comic, but they are gory, they are rated R comic book movies. I think this Deadpool movie, if it does well, like I think it very well could do, we are going to get a better chance of having these R-rated out of the two powerhouses movies. Like we could get the R-rated DC stuff and the R-rated Marvel stuff.
Well, I mean, we've talked about how Marvel does films and the fact that they try to give each film, more and more at least, since they launched, they try to give the different films their own voice, their own reason for being. So, you know, when you talk about The Winter Soldier being what is essentially a political thriller, when you talk about Guardians of the Galaxy being a space opera-ish comedy film, when you look at Ant-Man and Ant-Man's being pitched as a heist movie now, taking those things into mind, it would make sense that you would then have the more adult character that would, you know, play towards the mature audience level. And while Marvel's not going there on their films, they did sort of go there with the Daredevil series. The Daredevil series is incredibly dark. I don't know if that's going to be the precedent that they put in place for all of the series that lead in the Defenders, but for Daredevil, it worked really well. If Fox is saying, okay, we're going to try that with Deadpool, that's great. Now, what happens when they eventually try to hook Deadpool up with some of the other X-Men characters? That'll be something to see. If you can have that R-rated character show up in a PG-13 film next to Storm and Jean Grey and those people, if that can even happen. or if they keep Deadpool more on his own. The thing is that Colossus is prominent in both the movie and in the trailer. So Colossus is a character that's already been in the X-Men movies. Not used a lot, but has been used. So that means that there is crossover potential between these. Also, Bryan Singer made some noise about that he'd be willing to do an X-Men crossover with the Marvel films, try to do a dual thing. I think it's kind of funny that Bryan Singer is saying that, like, he's in charge of the X-Men and not Fox. I don't know if he's got quite the reach of that or not.
But. Yeah, but keep in mind, I mean, we also heard that stuff from Mark Webb, Andrew Garfield, Emma Stone. Yeah, Emma Stone. Like, all the people who were doing Amazing Spider-Man at the time saying, oh, yeah, we'd love to be in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. No, it's just
and I'm sure that they would, but it's not up to them. Yeah. And by the time it was up to the companies to say, okay, we're going to do that, they were all kicked to the curb. So I don't know how long Bryan Singer is going to be around doing the X-Men movies as it is, but they're introducing things. Like, there is one more Wolverine movie that we know of. There is the Gambit movie on the horizon, and there is now the Deadpool movie, and they're introducing what are the younger X-Men again in this new Apocalypse film. So there's room for it, although the X-Men, as I understand it, Apocalypse takes place in the 80s, or is it the 90s?
In the movie, it's like the late 80s, I want to say.
Late 80s. So, I mean, already we've got young characters playing the X-Men in three decades ago.
Some of the actors playing the characters were not even born at the time that they're representing.
Right. So that I don't know how well the X-Men themselves could cross over as they are right now. But that doesn't really matter. That's so Horizon. You know, we've got to see how Apocalypse does. We've got to see how all these movies do. And we've got to see if these companies even want to play with each other. I mean, the behind-the-scenes stuff is still saying that Marvel is playing hardball by cutting off books left and right, by taking away any Fantastic Four books because they want no association. They don't want Fox to profit off a Fantastic Four book marketing their Fantastic Four movie,
yeah.
Is the rumor. Nothing's been confirmed on Marvel's side on that. In fact, they're denying it left and right, but that is a rumor. And even rumors, if they're not true, can still damage relationships between these companies, and they're big companies. We're talking about Fox and Disney.
And I mean, my thinking with that, and it's probably also Marvel's thinking with that, like, is, well, if that were the case, wouldn't we do the same with the X-Men? Because it's the same company that has the movie.
Same company, but X-Men books sell way better than Fantastic Four books do.
Yeah.
So they've done everything they can to make the X-Men less recognizable as the X-Men. They've made a totally convoluted storyline, bringing the original characters from the past into the present day, mixing up the teams, just doing a lot of stuff to make them less X-Men-ish and to make the stories less adaptable to film. There's also been talk that certain creators were told that they were not allowed to create new mutant characters or any kind of new characters for the X-Men franchises. They could only use existing stuff because, again, why are we going to create characters that are only going to profit Fox? You know, we can't take a mutant character and put them into the Marvel Universe. So why should we make any more characters for those teams? The rumor, speculation, you can kind of see that it may be sort of true. There's been very sparing creation of new characters in the X-Men stuff.
Yeah.
It's a lot of rehashing. But Marvel's rehashed a lot of things. And right now their thing is to create altered gendered or altered race characters based on their existing properties. Or one of the things that came out this weekend is Blade now has a daughter that he didn't know about.
Hey, what you gonna do? Daywalker's got to get down them as well.
Party down, Blade.
But no, so, I mean, the other big stuff was there's a lot I posted on the splash page today. All the comic books that were announced, so if you're into comic books, I don't like how comicbook.com phrased it. Like, they did Marvel, DC, Dark Horse, IDW, other smaller publications. And I'm like, Image outsells both IDW and Dark Horse. How are you going to say they're a smaller publication?
They probably misspoke. They probably weren't intending to include Image in that.
No, yeah, it's true. Oh, and Vertigo was in there as well, as had their own separate. Like, okay, whatever. But it was just like that whole thing. I'm like, but, and the problem with that part is, unless you search for every single book, you don't know where when what publisher it's going to come out of. Oh, and Oni Press was in there too. I'm like, wait, sorry. But no, so like they announced all these different books, which a lot of them I'm like, oh, that's cool. Like there was, I think Kelly Sue DeConnick has another book that'll be coming out through Image. So does Matt Fraction. So I'm like, oh, there we go. Another one of their books to replace the other books that are coming in. But no. So, yeah, that's a lot of the San Diego Comic-Con news. If you want more, go check out the splash page. I've talked about it. And the one of the links you can find, if you do a little YouTube digging, the full DC TV panels, like the Flash, Arrow, Supergirl, Gotham, or basically as I like to call it, the Geoff Johns show, because he was on for every single part, and I'm like, yeah, dude, just hang out. Why do they even have you go off backstage? Just sit there.
Just get the throne.
Yeah.
And a catheter. So you posted you were going to talk about the Batman v Superman trailer. And I said, well, then you may as well talk about Suicide Squad 2 since they officially released it. So what were your thoughts on the trailers?
I really liked the Batman v Superman trailer. I like how they're justifying Batman v Superman, how they're justifying the fight where, at least from what you're seeing, it's like where it's like, okay, Bruce Wayne is going after Superman, Batman's going after Superman because he knew the people that were in Wayne Tower. It wasn't just because he lost a building in Metropolis. It's because he knew the people there. Sort of deal. I love some of the Easter eggs that were in the trailer that you see, like the Robin suit with "Ha ha ha! Now I've won" or whatever it said from the, like clearly from the Joker. And I'm like, death in the family. Like I knew it was when he killed Jason Todd and all that stuff, and which it was, like and there's like these little things. Like, ooh, that's so cool to see. Like Superman has soldiers, and I could see a lot of religious connotations with it as well. Like, oh, hey, we're going to make Superman look like Jesus. And Lex Luthor, Evan's asking my thoughts on Lex. I think Jesse Eisenberg's going to do pretty good. I was getting some Michael Rosenbaum vibes when watching this, and which are not bad to have because he did a pretty good job as Lex Luthor, in my opinion. And so I'm enjoying this. I'm curious to see as to why he loses his hair, because in the trailer you just see him with the hair, and then he, of course, shaved his head later for other parts of it. But yeah, Wonder Woman.
I'd assume he was held down by someone from a salon who said, honey, that's just not going to work.
But yeah, and then Wonder Woman looked great. I think they did great casting with Gal Gadot. I mean, She looks like an ass kicker. So yeah. And then the Suicide Squad trailer, I enjoyed that one too. There's not really a lot. I hate to say this, but I think the weak link in there might be Will Smith, because it just seemed like he was doing. It was Will Smith playing Deadshot in, that you saw in there, not how you lose. How you okay, like you recognize, okay, that's Cara Delevingne, but it's like, no, she's the Enchantress here. Or Margot Robbie, like, oh, no, she's Harley Quinn here. Which I'm still, maybe it's from reading the comics and having the Batman, was it Arkham video game, that you, or Arkham City, where you had Tara Strong take over, but it's all like, hey, Puddin'. Like, it's all like it's all like very New York accent in a way. I think, or Long Island, I want to say something like that, with how Harley's voice has been done, to hear it that way, I'm like, that's interesting, but I immediately forgot. It immediately went away. And Joker, I felt like it was fine. All the other ones, Jai Courtney, they felt good, fine to me, like, with all I saw.
So I saw somebody say this today, so I don't want to take credit for it. Will Smith no longer looks like the Fresh Prince. He looks like Uncle Phil.
I could see it.
I mean, he totally looks like Uncle Phil in that. I don't want to go too much into that. I knew going in my feelings on Batman v Superman, which is that it's not going to be for me. It is still visually, you know, very cool. A lot of cool stuff in the trailer to look at. But when it comes to the heart of the characters, I don't see it. I don't feel it. Lex Luthor, Jesse Eisenberg is an actor that I've liked in things. He has no gravitas. He has no authority to play Lex Luthor to me. He seems so wimpy. He seems like Luthor's nephew in Superman 4. He's like the John Cryer little valley boy compared to any kind of Luthor that should be up on the screen. I don't feel that he could ever be looked at as a threat. I don't care if he's got the tacked on extensions or no hair. He just looked dumb. At the end of the day, it's still Superman and Batman fighting each other, whatever the convoluted reasons, trying to make good on the wreckage of Man of Steel. Doesn't make Man of Steel a better movie. It just means that, you know, okay, well, we get to at least address it here, whereas it should have been addressed in its own film.
Yeah.
All that said, it's going to be very successful. Mm-hmm. Judging by the audience reaction to it, judging by the people who are seeing it and like, oh, I was on the fence before, or I didn't think I was going to like it before, now I'm really into it. Great. You know, everybody who wants this movie, watch this movie. And I'm going to try to keep my intentions limited on it, because I don't want to see this movie. I know for a fact I don't want to see this movie. I've been through the disappointment enough, not just in Man of Steel, but in anything by Zack Snyder that I've seen. You know, there's no depth to his Watchmen. It's a lot of action shots, but it's not emotionally drawing or intellectually drawing in the way that the books are. And I wasn't a huge fan of the books, but the movie really lets that down. It looks stunning, but it's a mess. They're showing pictures of Batman all dusted over in a desert battle suit or something. That's great. More dust. I mean, the whole movie looks dirty.
Yeah.
So I don't really want to see that in my Superman vs. Batman film. Jamal Eagle, who is a very well-known, very famous artist, has done a lot of work with DC and other places. His Molly Danger book is up on Kickstarter right now for Action Labs, where he works now. He basically said, you know, is it strange that I'm more excited watching the Suicide Squad trailer than I am watching the Batman v Superman trailer? And someone said it very succinctly. They said, no, because Suicide Squad is people meant to be portraying villains. You know, they're bad characters in the comics and they're playing bad characters up on the screen. Batman v Superman is bad characters up on the screen who are supposed to be heroes. So, yes, tonally, Suicide Squad, it's much easier to get right, if that's where your starting point is, than what they're doing with Superman and Batman.
Yeah.
So I just can't say that either of these films are really grabbing me. I think Suicide Squad looks at least better. Again, in the same way that we were just talking about with Deadpool, is that tonally, it's doing something different. It's doing something different from all the superhero movies in general than the fact that it's focusing on villains. It's doing something different that it's focusing on them being held against their will and used by the government. So it is a different story, and it makes sense for these characters to be in that story. And there's some cool scenes. I'm still not a big fan of visually what they're doing with the Joker. Harley, to me, I'm very particular about my Harley, but all I can think of when I look at the actress Margot Robbie playing her is Darkest Time Lane Britta from Community. And that at least makes me smile. Then I think, oh, okay, well, that's kind of neat. I thought it was funny when they started playing the soft singing. I started a joke that got the whole world crying. I thought, well, it's funny because if they had the Disney option, I would have had them choose "I Love to Laugh" from Mary Poppins. Either way, though, tonally, the way that trailer did that with the music reminded me of tonally of Age of Ultron. And that can be a good thing or a bad thing. I think tonally what Age of Ultron did wasn't necessarily great for the Avengers, but it would make sense for Suicide Squad. So, you know, the one of these movies that I'm very likely to see in the theater is Deadpool. Yeah, which is surprising because I have no interest in seeing any of the X-Men movies in the theater.
Yeah. But come on, it's Deadpool.
I'm not a huge Deadpool fan.
Yeah.
I'm really not. But I do think the fit of Ryan Reynolds as Deadpool is as close as we're going to get to that symmetry of like what makes sense in the comics to what makes sense on screen to finding the perfect person to play the character, like what we had in Robert Downey Jr. when he played Iron Man, like what we had with Ron Perlman playing Hellboy. I think that there are things that just work really well, and it's not so much inspired at this point because he at least got to play the character before. They just screwed it up, but he's playing the character now in the way that we want him to be played when he was on screen before. Yeah. And the fact that they do make jokes about Green Lantern and it is okay. You know, it's not uncalled for. You know, people are going to want that called out, but only call it out once and then move on.
Yeah. The other real thing I want to hit back is back with the DC... the DC TV panel, because I am super excited for all of these seasons that are in the Berlantiverse that are coming up here. Because, I mean, you got Mr. Terrific coming to Arrow, which they haven't said which version of Mr. Terrific, but they did say that he's going to work with Felicity Smoke and that he's going to be gay, which I'm like, all right, there we go. You know, like, it's an interesting thing, you know, like we have the diversity here, more of the cast.
Well, I mean, I don't know which Mr. Terrific that would be because I only know of the original, and then I know of the legacy character, which was Terry Sloan. And I really liked the legacy Mr. Terrific before New 52 kind of went all wonky on his series. The series was bad. And then they turned him into a villain for Power Girl for a while, but it was not really him. But I really like that character. I don't have a problem if they do make that character homosexual on the show, just so as long as they keep him being the badass that he was.
Yeah.
And his abilities and his T-spheres and all that stuff. I thought he was great. But he's another tech character when we've had the tech character recently with Ray Palmer, who was, you know, the Atom, but was more or less Blue Beetle.
Yeah. And then you have, which it makes sense. I mean, if you're going to have some tech stuff there. And the other part with Arrow is he's going to be called Green Arrow. He has a new costume, which it looks really cool. It's not just how is he able to deflect bullets if he's just wearing leather sort of costume? Oh, this is more battle tested.
With it's like the upgrade of Daredevil.
Yeah, in
the Daredevil series.
Yeah, exactly. And then over on Flash, Jay Garrick, the helmet was not just a throwaway Easter egg because Geoff Johns had said in an interview or at the panel, I forget where, we're not in the business to do just throwaway little Easter eggs. Like it was, I think it was one of the producers. It could have been Geoff Johns. I could be completely wrong. And they have cast Jay Garrick. They cast, I forget her, it's the character's last name, Spivot?
Yeah, a romantic interest for Barry, but I didn't recognize the character.
I didn't
Patty
either.
Spivot.
Yeah. And I didn't recognize the character either. I'm like, okay. And then for Legends of Tomorrow, they got Hawkman, which I'm like, all right, there we go, that's cool.
Which makes sense if we're going to have Hawkgirl. It's one of those things where if you're following the origins of the character from the original material, then yes, there is a Hawkman to go with Hawk Girl. On the other hand, I have no problem with there just being a Hawk Girl in the series and just not using Hawkman. But in the Justice League animated series, utilizing Hawk Girl for as long as we did and have her being one of the original JLA with everybody else, when they introduced the Hawkman portion of it, it both broke the character, but it made great story.
Yeah.
So I enjoyed that aspect of it. Hawkman is a neat character when you consider he's basically Conan with wings.
Mm-hmm.
But then we get but then Hawkgirl's just Hawkman with breasts. And while I enjoy white meat, I don't think that that's necessarily what we need to have happen. It would be nice to see the female characters represented as their own characters. That's one of the cool things about Black Canary and even White Canary is that their only legacies are to each other. They're not legacies mm-hmm. off of anybody else. So where Supergirl is obviously a legacy of Superman, we could have had a Hawk Girl without a Hawkman. It would have been okay.
Yeah. And there's no casting on I don't think they've announced who's playing Hawkman and are you alone what version, like if it's the, I'm blanking on the character's name from Thanagar, or if it's the human sort of deal. But so it's all going to be really exciting stuff to see throughout the year. And it's just a great sign that we have great comic book properties on both the big and small screen. But that's about enough of the news talking about San Diego Comic-Con, because we spent about a half hour doing that. So let's get into the TV shows here and movies, because you've watched like three movies, where I watched Kingsman Secret Service and forgot to put that on there. So let's start with BB-17. We'll get that right out at the bat, up at the top here. I don't know what to make of the twin twist now that there's like five or four people that know of the twin twist.
It's sort of like, oh, we've got the twin twist again, which was sort of annoying. And I'm like, oh God, they're going back to that. Well, but now it's a completely different take on it.
Mm-hmm.
Because before no one knew about the twins until the other one got introduced to the house. And then they both got to play together for like a week, and then one got evicted immediately. We're going to use this to our advantage thing. And I think that's actually way cooler. Now, obviously this isn't a scripted like, oh, we're retelling the story, we're putting a twist on it. It just happened this way, is that, Julia decided to trust some of the people that she's been hanging out with and told them that yes, she was a twin and yet she's playing with her twin sister. And they were like, cool, let's utilize this. Should have been what Day did. She blew it. She blew it hard.
No, yeah, blew definitely.
Right out the door.
And, like, I think Day might have had a point with her interview with Julie when she said that Audrey is a dangerous competitor because of the fact that she's Big Brother's first trans contestant. They don't want to be, whoever's HOH does not necessarily want to be known as the HOH who got the trans woman, the trans contestant evicted, sort of deal.
I could see how that would be something to suspect, but that has not really been what anybody said. Now, everybody could be very guarded, and like, I don't want to say that out loud, but I honestly think they're looking at it, no, she's the biggest threat in the house because nobody trusts her, so she's also the smallest threat in the house because nobody trusts her.
Yeah.
If you have someone who's just like, everything comes out of their mouth, this is a lie, as soon as someone realizes, oh, this person's always lying, and everybody knows, then that person's lost all their power. No one's hanging out with her, nobody's talking to her. You know, they treat her civilly, but they mostly leave her the hell alone. she can float for a long time because she really can't do anything unless she can win a competition and a lot of competitions. She's not a threat.
Yeah.
So, I mean, she had the ability to manipulate things before anybody knew. I think that they're right that, you know, everybody wants her as a target because they don't like what she did. But it's weak sauce to just get rid of her because who's the next target after that? That's what you'd start thinking about. It's like, okay, well, nobody likes Audrey, but a lot of people like Jason. Mm-hmm. And Jason is the next person who's won an HOH and, you know, has reasons to come after us and is liked by a lot of people. So why wouldn't we look at getting rid of him if we have the opportunity as opposed to her?
Yeah. No, but then it's like at that point, okay, so let's put you in their situation right now. So, boom, you're in the house, all that stuff. When do you execute that point? Do you wait for jury and then go, bye-bye? Do you wait until final five or final four?
No, I think I wait until I get rid of some actual threats, some, like, bigger threats, and especially because I'm not going to have the power every week. You know, Shelley had the power for her week, and then she knew she wasn't up for it the next week. So she got rid of somebody who was a threat to her. This week it's Vanessa, and Vanessa's like, I have the power this week. Why wouldn't I get rid of people who I see as actually physically threatening, who can win competitions versus, you know, people that I can outthink and people that I can outtalk? And Vanessa, I think she knows that she's smarter than a lot of people in the house, but she can't necessarily win a physical competition in the same regard as Jeff. Is that his name? Who's not smart at all.
Yeah.
Or the bumpkin Austin. Guy. I can't remember.
Oh.
No, not Austin. The Hicksville.
What's his name? Isn't he Jason?
Maybe. No, Jason is Austin. No, Austin is
Judas. Austin's the wrestler, Judas.
So yeah, Jason and Jeff.
Yeah.
The guy from the other game show. I don't know. That's the thing, is they kind of go in the background. No, Jason is the gay guy.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Who was on the team with Meg.
Hold on.
Doesn't matter. He's the guy who looks like he's Asian, but he's from the South.
Well, because he is Asian, not looks
Asian. He is Asian, right, but, you know, he's Southern Asian. He's Kentucky Fried Stir Fry. You got it. I said my racist thing. Thank you. Have a great show, everybody.
James, that's his name.
James. A lot of J names.
Yeah, there are. No, so, it was going to drive me crazy if I didn't figure out that out.
James has won an HOH. He and Jason won the first HOH together. So he's physically capable. You know, he's not dumb like Jeff is. Jeff is just like, he may be sandbagging a little bit, but he seems kind of like he's not totally with it. And he's got a good social game. So, yeah, it seems like those two are way bigger threats than Audrey is at this point because she has no power. You know, she could be a very strong player if she hadn't showed her cards too soon. And I think that that's exactly how I would look at it. If I was in power, would Audrey be my target? No. Would I be wary of her? Absolutely. Would I share a single thing with her? No. But I'd be friendly.
Yeah.
You know, be friendly and feed her information that I want shared, that I expect to be shared, sure. But do I, like Clay said to her last week, at this point in time, you're in this house because we've decided to keep you in this house. And she took it very personally, and she took it like, oh, you're just saying you have my life in your hands and you're issuing the threat against me. No, that's not a threat. That's just a simple statement, a fact, is that we decided that right now we don't care that you're here. But at some point, you know, if we decide that you are a threat at all, we'll be glad to get rid of you because nobody likes you.
But
you know, not as a personal thing, but as a game thing.
Yeah. Like
I appreciated Day saying. Day talked about Audrey in a game sense more than she did a personal sense. She got a little catty, but yeah. You expect that from Day. But for the most part, people, when they've left, they've talked about it is a game sense as who's the guy who left the first week?
Jace.
Yeah, Jesus. And Jace was the same thing. He's like, I would like to hang out with Audrey outside of this house, but in this house, no, she's bad as hell. So I think that's 100% legitimate. I don't think you can discount somebody as a player just because you want to pussyfoot around the fact that it might make you unpopular. That's what happened with Frankie last season. Mm-hmm. Is that Frankie was America's player so much of the time because he had a huge web following and people were like, oh, we love Frankie. Eventually, though, a lot of the populace got off the Frankie train because he wasn't great in the game. You know, he's a nice guy. He's very charming. But in the game, he did a lot of shit that people didn't agree with. And that's why he wasn't voted America's favorite player. Donnie was.
Yeah. I mean, come on. How are you going to compete with Donnie? It's the other part.
Nicole.
So all this week, I'm trying to think, like, with this whole, did we already peter out with the whole BB takeover thing with Rob Gronkowski? Because, I mean, it's like we haven't really seen anything really happen then. Oh, this is your bye week, to use a football analogy. Like, this is where all the events are going to be themed after our guest, the host, who's doing the takeover. But it's not really like there's anything else that he's doing. It's just, oh, hey, guess what? You're having fun.
That's
fun.
The thing is that the takeovers so far have been somebody gets a little bit of say in how the game's going to go for the week. So the first week it was the producer of the American race. The second week was Kathy Griffith. This week is whatever his name is. Thank you for explaining for clarifying what the football term was, because I obviously have no idea.
Well, this is someone who also watches or who plays fantasy football.
Right, exactly. So, like I said, I don't. If it's just going to be week after week, some semi-celebrity person is going to come in there and they're going to put their little spin on. Yeah, I don't really understand what all the takeover stuff is. It doesn't matter. You know, the game is still the game.
I felt like they misdid Kathy Griffith. Like, they should have done that later on, like the last time that the last week that they do a BB takeover, and then bring in Zingbot. Because that seems like a natural pairing.
It does seem like a natural pairing, but we've already seen it. You want to try to bring something new. And the fact that they keep bringing back Zingbot means that there's not something new at all. You want to try to at least break a little new ground each time. And that's why there are multiple takeovers this season, because they're just trying everything they can to make it somewhat different from the last few seasons. I don't know. I think that the show is the show, and we're just kind of like, we're in it because we're in it. If the people are likable enough, or at least watchable enough, then that's all that really matters. And you keep the people that you root for, and then you see the other team get ahead and you go, son of a bitch, why is this happening? And why would anybody vote for them to stay? It hasn't quite been that bad yet, but it's at least been interesting, is that there is enough infighting. It's not a boring season, but it's not a openly racist, sexist season either. It's kind of a lot of people who would normally float, but stepping up just a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, Shelly stepped up a bit, and I was surprised at that. I didn't think that Shelly would be the one to make a move.
It's interesting, though, because the other show that I've been watching, the other reality competition show, is WWE's Tough Enough. And I've heard complaints because, we like Steve Austin better because he seemed more like a host for this, where Jericho seems more game show host, which I get, but at the same time, it's like, you know, Steve Austin's busy doing his own CMT reality show, but it's like there's more floaters there, and I'm like, there are people, like, they've only been like three episodes so far, and I'm like, I could see you doing this if you had more experience. You're just a meathead. You're a meathead. You, I think, might actually make it on there. Then with Big Brother, it's like, I sort of have that, but it seems like there's more floaters over on WWE Tough Enough.
See, now, WWE Tough Enough, now, I have not watched the show. I mentioned that I had a friend that was on there in, like, the pre-airing. which would have gotten me to watch the show. But I think with that show, it's a little different because you're someone who has to show that you're going to entertain as a wrestler later on. So I think in that you want to do big moves and you want to be dangerous because that's what's going to make you mm-hmm. intriguing to have people want to follow you in the ring. And if you're just a person who floats to the win in that show, then they're going to look at you as, oh, who's the guy who's teamed up with Brutus the Barber Beefcake? I don't know.
Yeah. Well, no, there's...
You know, the other bulldog guy. I don't remember his name. And that's going to be you. You're going to be Coco Beware or George the Animal Steel. You're always going to be an also-ran. You're never going to get the Intercontinental Belt.
What are you talking... Wait, whoa, what are you talking about here with Coco Beware and George Animal Steel? Come on, those are names.
Those are... First of all, they were beloved, but they were never winners. Well, you know, you want to get to a winner's circle.
Mick Foley's in that same one then, Mick Foley's a legend.
A little different, though, because he was better as a personality than he was as a wrestler.
Yeah.
He was better outside the ring. Roddy Piper was like that, too. Roddy Piper was a turn heel who went good because he had a popular movie
mm-hmm.
and became more of a badass because he had a platform and he had a mouth than he ever was as a wrestler. You know, just as Bobby Ventura was never much as a wrestler, but he became bigger as a personality and a commentator because of the fact that he started doing things like Predator and The Running Man and then went into politics. So
and now it's
personality matters a lot more. Personality matters a lot more.
Yeah.
But
because there's one of the judges, they have, for this season, they have three judges, Hulk Hogan, who sits in the middle and like, gosh, his arms are as big as the girl Paige, who is the diva, a WWE diva, former divas champion. Like his arms are as big as her head, and he could be her, almost her granddad in a way. And then Daniel Bryan's at the other, is it one of them? But Paige, I got a little bit of a crush on Paige, I'm not gonna lie, but it's like she talks a lot of like no nonsense. Like she's called out some of the divas in there or the wannabe divas in there because they don't stand out. Like, and the one of the ladies in there is from Michigan. She's from Hope, Michigan. And Paige said to her, you know, I'm going to call you out here every week and bring you out until you step up. This week, I feel like she did step up, but it's like, yeah, that's what you need. You need these people who are going to step up. But a lot of it is that I've seen so far is fights that you saw on earlier seasons of The Ultimate Fighter, where it's like, come on, bro. It's like, all right, go take your go in your corner, take your steroids, you'll be fine. I mean, allegedly take your steroids.
See, that's the thing. If you compare this, because the other kind of shows that are like this in a way are Next Food Network Star and Design Star. And in those kind of things, it's the opposite, is that you have to be likable. But in this, you don't have to be likable. You just have to be, you know, charismatic enough. Like, we'll take a bad guy wrestler. Mm-hmm. We'll accept that. If you're a great bad guy, or if you're a great, you know, middle of the road guy, if you can be, you know, one of those people who plays both sides, fantastic. But you have to have a larger than life personality. When I'm watching Next Food Network Star and I see someone being a jerk, well, I'm never going to watch your show. You're a jerk.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't matter that you won and you got here. In the end of the day is that I don't like you. You go work a cruise ship show and put brown face on your kid. This is not going to work for that. So I think this is an opportunity where be big, be a huge personality. That's the only way that you're going to stand out and the only way that you can really win. Because you can win the show and not win in the ring. You need to be thinking ahead, not just where you are right then. And if you're the personality who is on there and doesn't necessarily win the prize of the show, but you're that big personality that the WWE is going to want anyways, they'll hire you.
Yeah, no,
you know,
look at The Miz.
They'll put you in afterwards.
Yeah, look at Mike The Miz Mizanin, you know, former Real World Back to New York was his season that he was on, and he did not win Tough Enough. It was a dude who was a former MMA guy named, or when he went back, Daniel Pewter, who won during their season. Mike Mizanin was the better guy. You could see the charisma in him. You could see the charisma when he was on the Real World, and he just bought like one of the toy belts, and he's sitting there up at the top of the stairs, just, you know, like pulling a rock, you know, hoisting the belts up. You could see
he had grins. Telling me is that Miz was the Clay Aiken of his show.
Yeah. Yeah. Ha. There's, I don't know. I can't think of any Tough Enough super winner, guy or girl, who went on to do big in the WWE. Like the first guy, Maven, they're just talking about him coming back now. He had a little stint. I don't think he ever won any championships. I think at the most, to use wrestling terms, he was just like a mid-carder, where, you know, he's sort of like middle of the field type person, but not someone who was who had enough to be a main eventer. So like for all these guys, there are a few of these guys where I see the potential, but it's more of because they offer something different than these other guys. Like there's a lot of the guys with this group of Tough Enough, and I'm focusing on the guys because the ladies, it's very different. But a lot of the guys are just tall, meat, just sort of guys. You know, what you think of when you think of a professional wrestler. And that, to me, doesn't make interesting stories. Like, the only reason why Bill Goldberg was so popular was because of his dominance. Same thing with Brock Lesnar. The only reason why he's so popular is because of his dominance. As a character, they're not strong. Like, that's why Brock Lesnar barely says anything now, and it's all Paul Heyman, because Paul Heyman is a mouth. Yep. You know? And, I mean, it's like you get these smaller guys who almost look more everyman than and less bodybuilder. Oh, we just got a dude who won Mr. Olympia 5 times in a row on WWE. Like, it's not going to guarantee good stuff. So that's been wrestling talk.
I have to admit, I know nothing about any of these people, but that's okay.
No, it's...
I've seen seasons of Next to a Network Star where the person who won, yeah, they get their show for a while and then they kind of disappear into obscurity. And then one of the runner-ups, or even not even the runner-up, comes out later on and mm-hmm. winds up getting a show, usually starting on the Cooking Channel instead of the Food Network, which is the baby version. And then one of the guys, Adam Gergler, is the movie guy on FX during all their big FX movies and stuff. He's one of the hosts of that. So the personality thing matters.
Yeah.
Jeff, the sandwich guy who was on his season, I don't think he won, but he's on The Kitchen on Food Network with a bunch of other hosts and stuff. Yeah, I completely agree with you. I think that is the whole point, is that you've got to emote. You've got to be bigger than the show that you're on. You've got to be big enough to be the next thing that people want to see. Like, fan favorite. You've got to be a fan favorite.
Mm-hmm.
If nothing else.
Yeah. So you finally saw Big Hero 6.
I finally watched Big Hero 6. I was going through the on-demand stuff, and I was looking at different movies and stuff to see, and it popped up there. I'm like, I didn't know this is available. It was cute. It's a cute movie. It's not deep. It was a Disney film, not a Pixar film, and you can kind of tell.
Yeah.
And what the story was. But beautiful. There are points on it where I'm just watching it, and the colors and everything moving on the screen, it was just so gorgeous.
Yeah.
Not quite at Sense8 levels, but Sense8 is different because it's actual real things.
Yeah.
But the color stuff and everything. I like the characters. I thought it was a really cute movie. Aaron watched it with me and, you know, was more or less, you know, halfway attentive to it.
Same with my mom. With my mom. Like we played it out here. I think I played it on the Apple TV or something for her. And she was watching it, and I'm like, and we get to the credits. I'm like, no, wait, mom, watch. Because you got the post-scene credit, and then you get the additional credit of Stan Lee as the one character's father.
Yeah, that was a good cameo for Stan. I thought that was very cute. The underwear thing is way weird.
We wear them front, overall, though, we wear them back, we flip that, out, he's yeah, doing it again.
And then front and back. It's cute, but it's one of those things that can only work if they do more with it. Mm-hmm. Like, I am surprised and a little disappointed that there's not a Big Hero 6 cartoon series.
Yeah.
At this point, because those characters weren't hugely developed in the movie. In the movie, it was, you know, all Hero and Baymax, and the Honey Lemon and all the other characters. Great voice acting in the thing. They got their moments, but they weren't really deep. It wasn't like The Incredibles, where you felt like every character had an arc and every character had growth. This was just, we're all here for you because you're the little brother of someone who was our best friend. So it was sweet, but I think that it needed more, and I think that there is potential for more. I don't know that it necessarily would be a big hit movie with a sequel. I think it would make more sense if they did an animated series like they used to do with a lot of the Disney properties. The Hercules series, when they went to a cartoon series, was fantastic.
Yeah.
They had almost all the original voice actors except for the two leads. But everybody else that was on there was just impeccable. And I think that there would be something to that if they could do that with this. Like,
what
Netflix is doing with Turbo and what they've done with a lot of the Madagascar characters, spinoffs.
And Netflix has become the place for the DreamWorks stuff because Dragons is over there as opposed to where it was on Cartoon Network.
Yep.
But I want to say that Disney, the last show or movie to show that they had was The Emperor's New School from The Emperor's New Groove.
Right.
But and that one, I think the only one who came over was maybe Yzma. But I know Patrick Warburton came over. But I don't think David Spade.
Wasn't David Spade, I don't believe, on that.
No. But no, so yeah, it's one of like, gosh, I didn't think about that at that point until you brought up. Yeah, that would be a good TV show to do.
And Man of Action are the creators of the characters, and Man of Action keep doing cartoon series. I'm sure they would love to do a series based off of that, even though they weren't the screenwriters for the movie. You know, I'm sure that they would do a great lot of work with making an actual series out of the show or making a show out of the movie. So, I don't know. It was cute. I can't say a lot about it. I mean, the villain was kind of obvious, and it moved very briskly through telling you what it wanted to tell you. But the character designs and stuff were fun. It's not going at the top of my list, you know, but I'm glad that I finally got to see it.
No, yeah. Sorry, I'm checking my Slack thing here. I'm on Slack, by the way.
I have no idea what that is.
It's they're billing it as the IRC killer. Like they have desktop apps. They got apps for Android, iOS, all that. It's fun. I got it with some of my Minecraft friends because I'm helping do some stuff over there now. But anyways, let's shelve that talk because that's for a different show that we haven't started yet. And let's do Starts and Stops. Starts and Stops is of course the place where we go. Normally I record these, now the new normal is I record these, but I got lazy today and got busy doing other stuff, so I'm doing it live. In the words of Bill O'Reilly, F it, I'll do it live. So starting July 14th at 7 p.m. on Fox, you have the 86th annual MLB All-Star Game. And remember, the stakes for that are the winning team gets home field advantage during the World Series. 9 p.m. on TLC, you have the 12th season premiere of Little People, Big World. And then Cooking Channel, we talked about this earlier, unintentional, completely unintentional. We have the series premiere of Stakeout with Kix Brooks. And I'm actually pretty excited for that one because it's Cooking Channel is on this trend of giving country musicians TV shows. Because there's one with, because I saw it this morning, or yesterday morning while I was watching Good Eats, that one of the ladies from Little Big Town, I think it's our Lady Little Big Town or Lady Antebellum, one of the two, has a cooking show. And I'm like, all right, cool. Then at 10 p.m. on TLC, you have the series premiere of My Giant Life. And FYI has the series premiere of We're Moving In on Wednesday at 8 p.m. on ABC is the 3-hour special presentation of the 2015 ESPY Awards, basically ESPN's award show that they're airing on ABC because it's the same network. 9 p.m. on TLC, you have the second season premiere of Leia Remedy, It's All Relative. And at 9:01 p.m. on Fox is the first season finale of Bullseye. 9:30 on A&E is the third season premiere of Wahlburgers. At 10 p.m. is the series premiere on TV Land of The Jim Gaffigan Show, which looks really good. At 10:30 p.m. on TV Land is the series premiere of Impastor, which, speaking of Michael Rosenbaum, this is him as a con man who goes to convinces a small-town Lutheran church that he is their new gay pastor. Not going to lie, I'm probably going to watch that just to check it out. Be like, okay, let's see what's going on here. And to see if Michael Rosenbaum's bald or has hair. Probably has hair, but still. One can hope for bald.
You know what? He pretended that he was a woman, and then he pretended that he was Clark's friend. So and he can be very convincing.
I think there was another movie or a TV show that he was in where he pretended to be the one girl's boyfriend in that one, Breaking In, that show on Fox?
No
that
idea.
Lasted for like 2 seasons.
Oh, he pretended he was going to have a long-lasting show on Fox. There you go.
And also at 10:30 on A&E is the series premiere of Lachey's Bar. On Thursday at 8 p.m. on the Game Show Network is the fourth season summer premiere of The Chase. And then at 9 on Game Show Network is the series premiere of Chain Reaction, even though they already had the show on there from a long time ago. Well, not long, but like 10 years ago or so. 10 p.m. on Cooking Channel is the second season premiere of Carnival Eats. And FX has the series premiere of Sex and Drugs and Rock and Roll. Every time I see that title, I sing the song. I sing the theme song that goes with the commercials. At 10:30 p.m. on FX is the second season premiere of Married. 11 p.m. has the series premiere of Sci-Fi's Geeks Who Drink. And at 11:30 p.m. on Sci-Fi is the series premiere of Reactor. On Friday at 3:01 a.m. on Netflix, you have the second season premiere of BoJack Horseman, the complete second series, so I will be binge-watching that. And Netflix also has the special presentation of Tig.
Is that one of Palin's kids?
Could be a Romney.
Oh, God.
And then at 10:30 on Food Network is the series premiere of Burgers, Brew, and Q. Excuse me. And then on Saturday at 8 p.m. on Hallmark is the 2-hour third season premiere of Cedar Cove. At 8:30 p.m. on USA, you have the special presentation. Basically, they're airing the movie. I don't know why it was called a special presentation, but whatever. Of 3 Days to Kill. CBS has the series finale of The Millers. And AMC at 9 p.m. has the 5th season premiere of Hell on Wheels. And Discovery has the 18th season premiere of Mythbusters. I almost said Mistbusters. That'd just be a game of people playing Myst. On Sunday, July 19th at 8 p.m., on NBC, you have the second season premiere of Welcome to Sweden. At 9 p.m. on Spike is the series premiere of Tut. And TLC has the second season finale of Return to Amish. At 9:30 p.m. on Fox is the second season premiere of Golem the Insatiable.
Finale.
And then at 10:01 on ABC is the series premiere at a special night of Save My Life. Boston Trauma is, I believe, the whole name. On Monday, so next week at 9 p.m., is the 1-hour 14th season summer premiere of Degrassi, The Next Generation. 14th and final on Teen Nick. It'll move to Netflix later. HBO has the special presentation of Packed in a Trunk, The Lost Art of Edith Lake Wilkinson. On 10:30 p.m. on Fox Sports 1, you have the special presentation Uncompromising Ronda Rousey. And FYI has the first season finale of Waterhouse Hunting. Waterfront House Hunting.
Also, just to clarify, the TIG show on Netflix is a documentary about Tig Notaro. She's the comedian. She worked on the Amy Schumer, Inside Amy Schumer. She was the cancer survivor. Okay, you would probably recognize her when you saw her. I've seen her in comedy for a long time. So it was one of those things, like when all of a sudden I was seeing stuff about her, her fight with cancer, and then coming out of it, fortunately, okay. I was like, oh, wow. You know, I didn't have any idea. So that could actually be a pretty good documentary. Yeah. And she's quite funny.
Okay.
Quite funny.
Yeah. And let's go to the movie draft where, Corey, you are still winning. And you have a sizable lead.
Barely. I have a lead. But, again, I want to point out Minions just launched and was the number one movie this weekend. So it achieved what Inside Out did not. Hitting the premiere at number one spot. Now, that was on the, fifth week for Jurassic World as opposed to the second week for Jurassic World. But that's a big changeover. So if it's got any kind of staying power, I'm already worried, let alone for the fact that Ant-Man is this coming week. And then Mission Impossible is Beatmaster's final movie. So between Minions, Ant-Man, and Mission Impossible on his plate, I am still kicking around with some small movies that have not been successful, with Ted 2 and Terminator Genesis. I'm not very hopeful from the ads that I've seen for Vacation. So it's kind of like Inside Out could carry me for a while, but I'm not really buying into it. So I'm not calling it, but we know it's Beatmasters to lose at this point.
Yeah. So the rankings right now are: I am in fourth place with $522.7 million. Evan is in third with $676.2 million. Beatmaster is in second with $705.8 million. And Corey, you, sir, are in the lead with $772.3 million. And both me and Beat have movies this weekend. Beat has Ant-Man, and I have Trainwreck. I almost said Ant-Wreck and Train-Man. Train-Man, what's his power?
When is Paper Towns coming out? Because that's got to be pretty soon, too. I keep seeing advertisements for it.
Paper Towns is the next, or is in 2 weeks. It's the 24th. That is my other movie. And then me and you have movies at the same time. You have Pixels. I have Paper Towns. We're getting towards the end here because it's just Ant-Man, Trainwreck this week. 2 weeks from now, the 24th. Is Paper Towns, Pixels, and then 31st is Vacation and Mission Impossible Rogue Nation, and then September 7th is my movie with Fantastic Four, and the 14th is Superman Play in The Man from U.N.C.L.E.
And how many weeks do you have those films for?
Man from U.N.C.L.E., the way the rules are for the draft is Man from U.N.C.L.E. will have 4 weeks, so the premiere and then three after. And then we are done. So, and it ends. So the season will end on September 11th.
So I'm not really counting you out either, because with what there is apparently to go against those films, Fantastic Four and Man from U.N.C.L.E., both big action movies, could help bring you up. I mean, at least could bring you up a couple of spots, and you may beat me out at the very least.
Yeah. I'm, as a person who, like I mentioned earlier, does fantasy football, and does this, I have just, you know, made my peace with the fact that I'm probably never going to win any of the leagues that I'm in, whether it be summer movie draft, winter movie draft, fantasy football. It's like, I'm good. I'm just here to have fun.
And like I said before, I'm just excited that it's not a runaway in anybody's court so far. I mean, it's been very exciting week after week to see things go. I mean, the first few weeks, screw you, Evan. But after that... It's definitely shown that a strong lead doesn't necessarily mean that you get to play all the way to the end. So I think that that's fun.
Hey, hold on. What do you mean? The first few weeks, I was actually in the lead. I was actually winning something. My hopes were getting up, and then Avengers.
Well, I'm sorry, Evan. Screw you, Gregor.
No, you had it right the first time. It was Avengers. But no, like, I honestly don't know how I would handle myself if I actually did win something like this, because I look at it like the dude who created fantasy baseball and thus created fantasy sports, Justin Robert Young said that he's never won his leagues. I'm like, I'm perfectly comfortable with being that guy. Like, hey, I brought this in. Are you guys having fun? Good. Okay, cool. I'm going to sit back here and cry now because I'm in last.
Yeah.
But no, so let's...
Beer tastes good with the saltiness of your tears on the rim.
That's what I've heard.
Yeah.
So let's jump back into this. You, sir, have seen... You're teasing yourself so much with this tiny house stuff.
Oh, my God. So, all right. So last week, after our show, I went and I saw that one of the tiny house shows was on. I'm like, oh, that's cool. And then I look at it, I'm like, well, why is it not recording? It says it's a new episode. And it was a totally different tiny house show that I was not aware that existed. Tiny Homes, Big World. I'm like, wait a second. This is total news to me. So I'm like, record. And then I see it's got a bunch of episodes that are replaying from the... It was like on the fourth episode was the new one, and then there were the first three that was replaying that night. I'm like, record, 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 record. And then I look again. I'm like, wait, Tiny House Hunters. Well, why is that not recording? Because Tiny House Hunters is not the show that I've been watching, which is Tiny House Hunting. So there are two shows on FYI, Tiny House Nation and Tiny House Hunting... And those are the things that I've been watching. Then HGTV has Tiny House Hunters, which is on its second season. And this Tiny Homes Big World show that just started. They also had some show that was apparently online or just for a little bit. I was looking on the website and I saw. I can't find any of those. But so I've got four tiny house shows. So I start recording this stuff. And then Monday night, I have to go to bed. I work in the morning. Aaron... was off Tuesday, Wednesday last week. So she's home, and I leave my show on, and I get up the next day, and I go to work, and I come home, and she's sitting there, and she's, like, watched all the tiny house shows. She just, like, left it on that night, and she's like, oh, wait, this is really cool. Oh, this is really cool. So Erin has now hit her obsession with the tiny home shows as well. And, like, every night, she's like, is there a new tiny home show? Is there a new tiny house show? Is there a tiny house show? And there were several throughout the week. But then we hit our limit. We're like, there weren't any more. She's like, what do you mean there's no more? I'm like, I don't know, baby. It's like, sometimes they only make a few at a time. That's how it kind of works. But yeah, so now my wife is on the tiny house thing, like not to live in. We could never live in it. And that's the other thing too, is what we've noticed on the HGTV stuff is when they say tiny homes, they're really focusing on the small ones. Like you'll get a variance on Tiny House Nation, will they say, oh, yeah, you can get down under 200 square feet. But then some people are like in the 400s. I've seen it 600 square foot count as a tiny home. There was a girl that was looking, a nurse, who was looking at a 86 square foot home and seriously considering it. And that 86 is,
square foot, that's like what, a stand-up shower?
Take your bedroom and cut it into about a third. That is probably where you're at with it. Now, part of that is a loft, but you get up to your loft and you're kind of like spelunking in a cave. It's like basically twice your width, and that's it. So I always think like, oh, there's so much space up here, what they're saying, and it's like, no, there's no space. There's no space. If you can't sit up without having a crick in your neck, or if you just can't sit up, it doesn't really count. Then these people are like, oh, well, I don't want to get a place with just a ladder because my dog can't climb up here, too. It's like, dude, you're not bringing your dog into an 80-square-foot house. That's just cruel. I don't care how small it is. But it's amazing. It is just amazing. Like, all of these things are just – it's so crazy to watch it. But it's neat. It's totally neat. And especially the building ones, because they're kind of making it their own. They're putting their own spin on it. Buying a small home is a little more difficult because you're going into what someone imagines is how you're going to live. But everybody kind of has to make these things for themselves. They have to sort of determine, you know, well, this is what we need. Yeah, that bench is great, but I'm not going to have a bench. The amount of people in these shows who are like, yeah, but what's going to happen when we have guests over? Why would anybody want to go to your home? Hey, I live in a sewer pipe. I'm going to have 15 people over for pizza. No, you're not. You're an idiot. No one's going to want to go there. You have a bathroom separated with a curtain, and it's not even a really like opaque curtain. Shut up. Go outside. That's your entertainment space. I'm just so happy. I'm so happy because I'm already obsessed with these. Finding out that there were a ton more of them and that my wife wants to watch them with me. I said the other day, I'm like, this is it. This is what this show is going to be about now. It's just going to be like, okay, Gregor, tell me what you watch this week, because all I'm going to talk about is tiny houses and tiny houses and tiny houses and tiny houses. And then I'm going to talk about small places. It's just, it was the greatest day of my life. And then I could have followed it up by watching Captain America, the Winter Soldier one more time. I don't know. I did watch the original Captain America First Avenger the other day, though.
Yeah.
I totally did. And then I watched the original Thor. I'm like, yep, yeah, I'm a sucker. That's it.
Got you in there, hook, line, and sinker. But not anything like Guardians of the Galaxy or something like that. Like, that's the one...
I still haven't rewatched Guardians of the Galaxy. I have not rewatched that. I even downloaded it in my phone through the Comcast app, and I just like, oh, well, you know... Now I'll just watch it on TV at some point. And I still haven't done it. I don't know why. I love that movie. I own that movie. That's the other thing, too, is that I own it. So yeah. I don't feel compelled to watch it. But, man, that I'm sure when I do it, I'll watch it like 900 times.
Yeah. So, let's get off of your tiny house hunt, your tiny house shows.
Because there's not enough room for these shows for the both of us.
Yeah. And I just did the math, like, while we were talking. Pulled up the calculator app. My room right here is 168 square feet, roughly, because I'm only guessing on, like, I think it's like a 12 by 14 room.
I'm like, okay, so a little bit more generous than what I gave it. Yeah. So half your room.
Yeah. But so anyways, Mr. Robot, on our, we have like three segments on here during the summer. Big Brother, other shows, USA shows. Because Mr. Robot, and I'm gonna say this right now, I sort of gave up on complications. I think part of it's because of the fact that, like, I'm still trying to read comic books on a regular basis, not take like 3 weeks to read 1 week of comics. I also have a problem where I'm downloading I'm getting like 36 issues a week. That's a light week sometimes. But yeah, so
complications is. I've seen the commercials for Complications. I still couldn't tell you remotely what that show's about.
It's...
Like, that's the thing, is the pitch for the show is bad.
Yeah, it seems like they're trying to capture Breaking Bad a little bit. But...
Yeah, see?
It's not...
I just look at it, and he's like, he's arguing with somebody, and then there's something with gangs.
Yeah, it's that's doctors, the big thing.
And I have no idea. I have no idea.
No, yeah, and that's the big thing with it, is it's the basic premise of the show, at least from the first two, I think I saw the first two episodes, maybe the first three, is you have the voice of an animated Batman now, Jason O'Mara, who is, he's a doctor, he's an emergency room doctor, goes and, because, like, you know, you're a doctor, you feel like you should help. If you see something going on, like a kid got hit or got shot by a hit and run, and he's sitting there trying to, you know, perform first aid and all that stuff, like, to save the kid's life. And this is all on the pilot, like the first 15 minutes or so of the show. Yeah, which means I've seen the first series premiere is two episodes. But anyways, and he just, like, stands up and just pow, 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 like, as the cop says, three shots, dead mast, or center mast on the guy. And he's like, I don't know how I did it, and all that stuff. And you believe him, but you're just like, okay, he's hiding something there, like some PTSD or something. And it's him getting deeper and deeper involved with this gang, because the kid that he saved, his dad is a gang leader in jail and all that stuff. And it's just like, it seems like they're trying to do like the Breaking Bad approach, but not as mental in a way. Like Breaking Bad was more thinking man sort of deal. This is more combined Burn Notice with Breaking Bad, and it's what they're going for. But anyways, Mr. Robot, on the other hand, is a great show. I am loving it. I'm still loving the episode names, because it's like, these are what you would see on torrent websites. And it, part of me wants to wonder, like, would it break the torrent website if they were to go, like, just the name dot, which ends in, like, dot MOV dot MKV or whatever, and then add another dot if it would break the format? Sure, yeah. But I'm really enjoying this
show. I like how the opening credits are, which is they're not really opening credits.
Yeah.
It just starts telling you the story, and then it does do the stuff over what's going on, but it's not like there's a, we get to this point and then we show you the logo for the show, and, you know, or even that little Lost spinning logo coming up or anything. It's just the thing starts going. The credits almost seem like, who's that guy who did the Royal Tannenbaums?
Funny thing, I was just thinking, like, wait, yeah, it's been reminding me of Wes Anderson.
Yeah.
Who is the guy here? And I'm like, yeah.
Filmed, the way that it's filmed. Now, yeah. There's certainly things on here that are reminiscent of other movies, other shows, other concepts. There's a huge Fight Club kind of influence to it. This episode started out with it showing one of the, what we assume is sort of like a villain character for the show, though we haven't gotten quite that far with it yet, where it's very close to an American Psycho take. Very, very close. There is Tyler Durden, as Beatmaster saying, Tyler Durden things in here. In fact, I'm almost questioning whether or not Christian Slater is a manifestation in the head of the main character, because I can't say that I've seen him really interact with other people and have them interact or react in return. And we know that our lead does have, you know, head trips where he sometimes questions the things that he's seeing, like the black coats that are running around after him.
Yeah.
He said that in the very beginning.
Oh,
so
God,
I'm
you're breaking
not,
me here, dude. Oh.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, is I kind of want to go back and watch the last couple episodes, because this episode in particular, I was like, I don't see Christian Slater, the Mr. Robot character, actually interacting with other people. Now, he walks into this room where all the hacker people are, and they all come and gather around him. And we see Christian Slater over at the bar, and we see them all gather around him, but we never see them look at him. You know, and when Christian Slater shows up at his work and he starts yelling at him at his workplace and stuff, like, we got to get out of here, you don't see Christian Slater interact with anybody. There is a point where Christian said something to somebody, the Appletini moment, correct. B-Master's saying it again. He talks to the bartender. The bartender doesn't acknowledge him.
God, you're blowing my mind here. Because I'm sitting there watching it, like, wait, didn't he talk to someone else in the pilot? Like, didn't he talk? No. Oh, God.
He goes up and approaches the two.
It doesn't help. Okay,
that are watching.
It doesn't help that I'm also reading the Fight Club 2 comic book while watching this. Oh, gosh.
If it's ripping things off, it's ripping off really good things, and it's doing it really well.
Yeah.
But it's going to feel a little cheap if that's all that it's doing. Although the hacker stuff is spot on in so many ways. It's so very good. And they are giving story parts to characters that I was not expecting to be as in-depth on them. His best friend, that is kind of the girl that he's got feelings for,
yeah, Portia, boyfriend,
the stuff they're doing with them, the stuff with his neighbor who has been his drug supplier, the next level of what they've gone with their relationship, Dahlia from
Spencer,
you know, I don't know what else to call her at this point, her involvement. So, I mean, there's a lot of great things here. I kind of hope I'm wrong on the fact that Mr. Robot is just a manifestation of his own brain. It seems like, okay, that would be kind of cheap because we've seen that. On the other hand, again, they're doing such great things with the rest of it that I could sort of deal with it. But I am paying a lot more attention to it.
Yeah, Wilfred is another example of that where it's a take on it, but I mean, it's basically the same thing. But yeah, I mean, Mr. Robot has been good, and you just successfully blew my mind with that, with saying that one thing. I'm like, God, he's right. Oh gosh, he is Tyler Durden. Oh my gosh. And then I'm like, wait, are you not confusing this with the comic? No, this is a TV show. Oh gosh. Am I losing it? Is Corey really here? Am I really just talking to myself in front of a Google Hangout? But no, so I'm I'm still enjoying Mr. Robot. I think I'm going to enjoy it more now that you mentioned that. I'm like, oh, God. And it's only going to be the way I see it. And I might get a little upset for like, oh, yeah, he's talking with someone else. Dang it. There goes Corey's theory.
And I would be fine if it ruined my theory. You know, yeah. I like surprised.
No, yeah.
But at least I'm being entertained. All that matters is I'm being entertained by the show.
Yeah, definitely. And I am being entertained by the show. So I don't remember what happened this week on Suits. Oh, but yeah, it was the case. It was a continuation of the one case with Rachel's dad. I can't think of his name.
Yes. Zane. Robert Zane.
Yeah, Robert Zane.
And do you think that this season is going to be what they're leading towards is Robert Zane figuring out Mike's secret?
Oh, gosh.
Because we had that part in the case where, you know, it looks like they're only going to go so far and they're trying to get it. They're trying to go to trial and Mike goes and memorizes all the case files. Yeah. You know, and now Robert Zane has seen that he can do that. You know, that nothing's really made of it in that moment, but it is something that Zane has now observed and he understands, or at least has an idea of how Mike's brain works. So it could be that he tries to steal Mike away, and that's what we're going to get to towards the end of the season, which is leading in with what the stuff that's happening with Harvey. That is Harvey's nightmare at this point, is that he's going to be left by all the people that he cares about. But it could also be because we are looking at the relationship between Mike and Rachel at this point, is if her dad found out that he's not really a lawyer while Mike is working so hard to gain his respect, that can cause a huge barrier between them all.
Yeah.
And did we just drop the storyline with the other guy that's trying to take down Harvey at the firm?
What dude was that?
Because Harvey goes to Mike and he's like, you know, I'm having problems with this guy who's trying to, you know, basically he's trying to take away, Harvey's trying to take away this guy's clients now.
Was this last season or was this this season?
No, that's this season. It's the guy who basically at the very beginning.
Yeah, he came at the end.
His money, right. So he was going back and forth and Harvey tries to reach out to him with the Barkley tickets and that backfires. And so he steals his client away, and then he comes back. He's like, well, we're going to do this now, and I've got you by the balls. And then Harvey's like, Harvey gets Mike to help him finally, because Mike has been busy. And they make mention of Mike doing something to put the block on it, but we don't actually see what happens. It kind of, like, happens behind the scenes. So I felt a little bit cheated on that storyline in that regard.
Yeah.
Like maybe they ran out of time or they edited it out to fit into the hour TV show.
Maybe, or it could be they put it off for this week, maybe. Because I forgot about that until you mentioned it. I'm like, oh, yeah, are they putting it off? But I don't know. I mean, I'm really liking the show. And I don't know if it's one of those things, like, if I'm blanking on Mike, if his character were to go to and work for Robert Zane, I don't know how that would work, because then it just seems like you're rehashing old storylines with, oh, now this person knows, and then this person, and, like, it's...
Well, I think it's always going to be a matter of someone could find out.
Yeah, you know, someone could, but then it's... But it seems like we've had, for these past half seasons, it seems like, okay, here's another person who knows his secret, and now they got to keep it, sort of deal. And, I like the idea of the threat, of the possibility of finding the secret, or finding out the secret, the delivery on that does not need to happen.
Right.
The
thing is that the conceits of the show are a couple of things. One, Mike has the photographic memory, you know, mm-hmm. that recall ability. Two, Mike is not a lawyer. He was a con man and he has a history with drugs, you know. And third is everybody else around him that could be exposed now because they know his secret. You know, his secret doesn't just affect him anymore. It affected Harvey when Harvey gave him the job. It affected Well, it affects Rachel because they're engaged. It now affects Lewis because Lewis is in on it. It affects Gina Torres' character, whose name I'm suddenly blanking on.
Pearson.
Jessica.
Jessica, yep.
Yeah, so, I mean, all of them would be affected. The entire firm would be affected at this point because they've all... I mean, collectively, they circled their wagons around Mike, and they're saying, we're going to protect you. You're part of us now. But that means that everybody is vulnerable for the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And Robert Zane is someone who is insanely powerful, you know, and has his ends there because of his connections to Mike and Rachel. So he would be a very good foil against them. It's hard to bring in new characters all the time who would be someone to disrupt things besides someone else in the firm. You know, we've got someone who's taken the place of Lewis in the firm now, who's the bad guy from within and has done underhanded things and gotten Lewis as part of the underhanded things as well, you know, and has control over Lewis now because of it. So we have a new Lewis, and at some point we have to have someone else who brings up the secret, or Mike's old drug dealing roommate has to come back into play again.
Yeah.
Or an ex, you know,
or an
Mike's
ex,
got an ex, or Rachel's got an ex. That's, there's only so many different things that they do repeat the storylines a little bit.
Yeah.
And there are three things to look out for on the show. As an avid watcher, three things that you will always see in pretty much every episode. One, manila folder. Automatically, the manila folder is like a character on the show. Two, them saying shit because they're on cable. So this is not your regular TV show, so someone's got to say shit at least once. And three, some reference to Harvey's balls. Every episode. Watch them. Keep count.
Why are you breaking shows for me, man?
It's just how it works, man.
And let's take a moment to enjoy our explicit tag.
You knew what this was.
No, yeah. I believe I swore earlier on, so we're good. But yeah, and then some real quick ones, because we're like at an hour and a half or so for this.
Yeah.
The Conan at Comic-Con was really good, really entertaining. It's something that I could see for a way for Comic-Con to expand would be through Conan. Like,
Conan is a very good representative. Also, the Nerdist stuff is fantastic at Comic-Con. But there's tons of sites. There's tons of people who do content for Comic-Con. It's just, how do we get it onto the mainstream for the people who are not automatically looking for that stuff?
No, yeah, true. And it would be through Conan, but I could see this because the theater that they were in was, quite a few miles away from the convention center, from what he said in one of the nights. And so it's like, I could see them where eventually, like, if they do this, if this becomes a yearly thing, they start to do, like, have exclusive, like, panels, like, quote-unquote, like, panels there, sort of like how they had the special surprise cast on Saturday's show, and it was the X-Men Apocalypse cast. I could see that sort of thing being more commonplace, and as a way for San Diego Comic-Con to grow, because right now they are sort of landlocked in Petco Park, the San Diego Convention Center, and the Hilton Bayfront is, I think, the hotel right there. So it's like,
plus, I think it's good that Conan put a stake down there, because I think Colbert would have done it.
Yeah.
I think Colbert starting his show, he would have been very likely to be like, oh, we're going to go to Comic-Con this year. Colbert more than Fallon. So Conan doing it is smart. Now, I think that means that Colbert could probably do something that's an East Coast
Dragon Con thing.
Very possibly. That would be in his wheelhouse.
So, yeah, and then the other ones, Humans, still really good, still enjoying Humans. It's that good thriller thing that's just got me going. It's got my gears going, and I'm enjoying it. And then, like I mentioned this earlier, Kingsman Secret Service, love that movie. It's so hilarious. And
yeah, I was talking at the comic shop last week with one of the people who I knew from when I was working there, and the new employee. We were talking about the Mark Miller movies and how they stack up against the comics. And especially Matthew Vaughn seems to have a has the ability to rein in what Miller's trying to do to make a more cohesive story and a better film than what I think the comic stories themselves are.
Yeah. And Beatmaster's telling me I need to see the unrated version. I'm like, oh, gosh. I love the movie so far, and it's like, I don't want to have to love it more to get the unrated version. But it's like Sam Jackson. I mean, you got to love Sam Jackson. He's the only person I know who can make a lisp sound like a badass.
Like, yeah.
Make a dude who has a lisp
to sound make like a bad. Very non-badass character still be a badass.
Yeah.
You know, his reaction to when he shot the guy and he's freaking out, and the girl is like, didn't that feel great? He's like, no, it didn't feel great. Yeah, that was so hilarious.
Yeah. So that wraps it up here for us. You can find more about us by following us on Twitter at ElseNerds. You can subscribe, check out our new webpage. I see it's like every week we get like new people following it, which is great. Hopefully they're watching or listening to our stuff as well. But it's at elseNerds.com. It's our WordPress site that has, right now it just has the, hey, we're live, watch the live video or the video feed and then listen to the audio. And we have our Facebook group at facebook.elseNerds.com. And you can watch our full archives from everything back pre-new website to now at watch.elseNerds.com. And we have a sister channel or a compadre channel over at the Galactic Netcasts, where you will see on their website, gncasts.com, you will see such wonderful things like the splash page blog done by some fool who sits in front of a computer with Marvel posters behind him. that's me, in case you haven't figured it out yet.
Got a Marvel poster, sort of.
Posters, plural.
Oh, okay.
I got you beat with three.
I just have some original art that I have to put up, but that's okay.
Yeah. And a Batman one for good measure. And also, who happened to be on this last episode of the Sci-Fi Geeks Club with Ryan Murphy and Brad and Anessa and Dave. Tasteful Dave, folks.
Tasteful Dave.
Yes. And it's over at gncast.com. They got such great shows like the Sci-Fi Geeks Club, Alien Invasion, Weird World Weekly, Adventure Party, and then the Net Bites like Who News, Galactic Gaming News, done by Ryan Murphy. Splash Page podcast done by some fool who likes it, who sits in front of a computer, me. And there's a whole bunch of other stuff too, like the S Word and a whole bunch of other stuff. Dave's doing a wonderful job over there. And just a reminder, we record What Else Is On every Monday night at 9:30 p.m. Eastern, 6:30 p.m. West, over on the Pacific time zones, the only two time zones that matter. I'm still there from Scott Johnson, but they're all important. Wherever you're at, they're all important. And this has been a Don't Tell Glenn production. We will see you guys next time.
Take care, everybody.